$20,000 off, 0% APR for 72 months. It is the 2018 model clearance event at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Our great friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they present the Ira Kaufman podcast and all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com. We have been out to both dealerships. They are fantastic. Of course, the Ed Morse name means more than 70 years of service and commitment to the community across Florida. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they have the new XT4, the beautiful crossover, is available. 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And they have a long list of special offers. It's right there on the homepage of the website. You will be impressed. And of course, the signature showroom at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. General Manager Brian Danahy has been on our show. He's a great friend of the podcast and Bucks fans everywhere. And the offers are fantastic. Get to edmorsecadillactampa.com. We thank Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for all of their support. You should support them. And here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Tuesday. The Ira Kaufman podcast is on with the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman, in the house. Here he is. He's actually here with us live at Hooters. He's refreshed. He is just calling for the head of Dirk Cutter. Fire Dirk Cutter, Ira says. How are you, Ira?
Well, my flag's at half-mast over there, DeKemper. I don't like to call for a man to lose his job heading into the Christmas holiday season, but we call him as we see him at Joe Buck's Fan. I think I represent talk for a lot of Buck Nation. That's not why I wrote it. I wrote it for what I think. And Cutter has had 3 years late. His predecessors had 2 years apiece. He got three. And he hasn't gotten the job done. They're not devoid of talent. They have a problem developing talent. They don't have overwhelming talent, so I'm not letting Jason Light off the hook by any means. More on that later, listeners, later in the week. Stay tuned to Joe Bucks Fan for that. But you know what? I don't have any regrets in football terms of for calling Dirk Cutter to be replaced Lee. He's had 3 years. He's lost two-thirds of his games since that five-game winning streak. Time for him to go.
Well, first off, I'm kind of got some mixed, if not disturbing, image going on here. Isbitz introduces you at being refreshed because you're at Hooters,
and I say my flag's at half mast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's
going
on.
Well, you could take that in knowing you, I know how you took it. my flag's at half mast.
Well, first refreshed in Hooters. That's a completely different.
Well,
image.
It was at half mast before I got the Hooters.
Okay.
There you go. Anyway, Lee, I don't expect you to weigh in on whether Cutter should be dismissed or not, but I think you'd have to acknowledge I could certainly make a strong case for his departure.
Yeah, obviously, it's the clock isn't ticking. It's already rung. It's just, when's the trap door going to be pulled? I take no joy in saying that, but you know what? He says it all the time. NFL is a production league. Bucks aren't producing. And I have to also be honest that, and I think Dirk would admit this too, he's said it more than once, to be honest with you. Since that Steelers game, he hasn't done a good job of coaching. When I say he hasn't, he oversees the entire team. We can't just pin this on Mike Smith, et cetera, et cetera. If guys aren't blocking well, it eventually comes on his desk. He's the head coach, not offensive coordinator, head coach.
They go 12-4, he's going to get a lot of credit.
Exactly.
He's going to get a lot of credit.
And he got a lot of credit. Well, first off, he got credit for developing Jameis. That's why he got the job. Then he got 9 wins. He got credit for that.
That's right.
So you can't just, it's not a one-way street. And oh, by the way, and no one, and I am not ashamed to admit this, no one with the possible exception of a certain radio host in the Tampa Bay area, no one defends Jameis more than me. Jameis looks like he's been neutered. It looks like he's hit a ceiling. Jameis, hey, he looked great in the first half against Baltimore. He looked fine in other parts. You know, like Chris Russo said, and a bunch of Bucks fans got upset with me. And I'm a defender of Jameis, but I can't disagree with anything Chris Russo said when he told you, when you made an appearance on his show last week, and Russo said, hey,
Jameis, you want to be an elite quarterback? You want to be paid elite? And you want to be elite? There's no question he does. He talks about that all the time. He goes, you can't get shut out in an entire half and consider yourself elite. When your team needs a win to have a prayer of the playoffs, you can't get shut out in a half.
He had two nondescript games here, so I think you'd acknowledge that.
Second half.
Second
two
half.
Second half.
Steve, I want to something that you and I talked about before the podcast. I want to get your opinion on it.
Well, Ira, first, let me cut you off here by letting everybody know Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon are our heroes on this podcast as we head toward the end of the year. And, of course, the end of the year means incredible sales events at both locations, the websites. If you're shopping for a vehicle, start there, edmoorescadillactampa.com. edmoorescadillacbrandon.com. You'll see all kinds of offers. Count on 70-plus years of Ed Moore's service and quality across Florida, family-owned dealerships. And we'll talk more about them later, Ira.
But I haven't seen you smile so much as when you just cut me off, Isbeth. A big, big smile.
It's part of the podcast. I want to weigh in on Dirk. He deserves to be fired. I don't feel bad for the guy. He's been a lousy head coach. He'll go down in Bucks history as a bad head coach. He's made a myriad of mistakes. He's not improved this team on special teams. He waited too long and screwed up on defense. Now the offensive goal is going in the toilet. What else is there?
You don't like his time management in particular?
That's nitpicking, isn't it?
He's not special as a head coach.
Now I want to bring up this point that Steve and I talked to DeKemper while you were on your 45-minute phone call over there while we were waiting for you. And I'll throw it out to Lee. Lee, I think this makes it worse. It cuts deep for Buck fans. You got to remember in the big picture, they started 2-0 with a backup quarterback when everybody thought they were going to be an 0-3 hole with Winston's suspension.
Including the guy talking right now with my right hand in the air.
So, Lee, doesn't that, when you pull back and look behind the curtain, and then they lose 7-8, it's inexcusable. You can't lose 7-8 when you get off to that kind of start with a backup.
With the roster he has, no way. I mean, yeah, Raheem lost 10 games. He didn't have DeSean Jackson. He didn't have O.J. Howard. He didn't have a number one. Well, Freeman wasn't a number one overall pick.
He didn't have Jason Pierre-Paul. That's right.
On and on and on. The roster that Cutter has, far better than what Raheem had. Raheem lost 10 in a row. Cutter was 7-8. You said 7-9?
7-8, I believe. 7-8.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that. I'm sorry.
Steve, was there a turning point to the 2018 Bucs season in your mind? Was it the game in Chicago when they weren't prepared and got blown out? I mean, what was it?
I think a lot of people aren't going to like me saying this, but I think the cold reality is the turning point of this season is Jameis Winston came back and he didn't ride in on a white horse and save the season with tremendous play and look like a Pro Bowler.
And they were 2-2 at the time, right?
Exactly. He came in and he wasn't special. And you need a special quarterback to win it, the way this team was constructed with a bad defense. And I think that was the turning point as we started talking about he hasn't played that great the last couple of games, hasn't put together complete games.
Just made a hell of a play in Baltimore. That was an unreal play.
That was. Yeah. It was.
Look, but that's a play. That's not a game.
Yeah. And so I think to me that's the turning point is Jameis wasn't all that when they handed him the ball.
By the way, Ira, just in case our listeners, your listeners, your podcast, think otherwise. Do I want Jameis Winston as a Bucs starting quarterback next year?
Yes, you do.
Hell yes.
Yes, you do.
So,
you've never deviated from
just
that.
Because I'm a defender doesn't mean I'm an apologist.
Lee, could the season have changed realistically if Cutter had dumped Mike Smith either after last season or at the bye week? Could that have changed anything?
Oh, absolutely. If he didn't bring Mike Smith back after the 2017 season, I think it would have changed things, yes, because look what Duffner has done. Now, granted, they haven't turned into the 76 Steelers, but look what he has done, taking over in midstream. He's done a hell of a job. They're playing decent football. No, they're not getting a job. Then they got lit up for 2017.
That's a ragtag secondary Duffner's got. There's
yes,
no question about it. Out of necessity.
You asked Steve what the turning point was, and it's interesting that you know we've got some perspective. The season is nearly over. I will bring up the Chicago game. I will bring up Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator of the Bears, who right now looks like he's a hot candidate to be head coach. If you're going to keep Jameis Winston, I pray that he's not coming to Tampa Bay.
Be fair, the Bears turned out to be a hell of a lot better team than we thought in week four.
The Bucs were the hot shot offense. Everybody was raving about them. They're like next level, 21st century Star Wars, you name it. Then they go up to Chicago, and Vic Fangio, who's a heck of a defensive coach, maybe he figured them out. Maybe he exposed them. We know the NFL's a copycat league. Maybe he put a blueprint out there on how to defend the Bucs. They haven't been the same team since. Outside of a couple of spurts, they really haven't been the same team since. And the last few weeks, they're nowhere near what they were offensively. Steve, so I think they got exposed. I don't think they ever recovered from that Bears
game.
That's a fair
point. Steve, is it fair to blame Cutter and to what degree when you consider that after the opener in New Orleans, post-New Orleans, there were like four or five road games that followed that the Bucs simply did not look ready to play, particularly on defense, but they didn't look ready to play. Huge halftime deficits. How much do you pin that on the guy sitting in the executive suite?
Please? How much? I don't know. I just think he's been a really bad head coach this year. Really, really bad on so many fronts, and I think he's just been weak-minded. When he came out on radio, Ira, and he said that he doesn't mandate anything on the defensive side of the ball. He doesn't believe in that. He doesn't veto. His are his words. He doesn't veto anything on the defensive side of the ball. What are you doing, man? You're the head coach of the football team. Your defense is getting steamrolled, and you don't think you could go in there and sort of self-scout your own defense and oversee it? He's just a bad coach.
You know,
I think he'll be a good offensive coordinator somewhere if he wants to keep coaching.
Yes.
But I don't feel bad for the guy. He's made probably $20 million in the NFL. He had a nice college contract before. He's set for life. He's still going to get paid next year.
And if he wants to return to OC, he'll get a job. He'll get a job.
And I wrote Cincinnati, aside from his Marvin Lewis long-time friendship, look at the weapons they have. Imagine putting Cutter's offense with those guys.
Now, here's an aspect of the team that's been a real black hole, but I don't think, in Cutter's defense, I don't think this is on Cutter. Tell me what you think. The kicking woes.
No,
I can't put that one on Cutter.
No.
Can you?
No, that's, I like the guy a lot, but again, I can't be an apologist. That's on the front office. I'm sorry. You go through that many kickers, you can't find a kicker? I just wrote this last week. At any rate, there's a kicker from Florida International, Florida Athletic.
Okay.
Last year, he was a record-setting kicker for the school. Miami Dolphins picked him as a free agent. He's in their backyard. Miami Dolphins cut him. And I can't remember who he kicked for. San Diego? It was a night game. Son of a gun has a couple. He has only missed two field goals all year. I can't remember his name. I can't remember who he plays for. But he's only missed two field goals all year. Like, wait a minute. Are you so burned on an in-state kicker because of Aguayo that you couldn't bring this guy in from Boca Raton? The Bucs are happy if their current kicker only misses two kicks in a game. And this guy's only missed two kicks in a season. I mean, the front office, time and time and time and time and time again, has crapped in their pants trying to find a kicker. That and running back. Why that is, I don't know.
Steve, that's a fair point that has to be addressed. Is not every issue on the 2018 Bucs can be directly pinned to Cutter's doorstep. I'll throw the kicking thing out to you. Is it a stretch to think Cutter was in Light's office many times over the last couple of years saying, you got to give me an upgrade? They didn't get it. Not on Cutter, Steve.
Okay, well, you could say it's not on Cutter, but are we supposed to then just assume that Cutter's not supposed to be able to evaluate kickers? Is that what we're supposed to assume?
Or it goes to his assistant coaching staff. You know,
Cutter handpicked Nate Katzer. Cutter is the guy in charge putting the kicker on the field. If he goes, maybe I'm wrong, I'll ask your sage wisdom. If Cutter goes to Jason Light and says, look, I can't put Catanzaro on the field anymore. Get me a new kicker. You think Jason Light actually comes back and says, no, list tough? How does that work?
Light probably says to Cutter, we're trying. We're trying, coach. We're scouring. We don't think we can do better at the moment. But you know what, Steve? These are nitpicky, beside-the-point things. I'm in agreement with Isbitz on this. He's done a poor job over 3 years. You take the body of work. He's 8 games under .500. And I think what makes it worse is the history of ineptitude over the last decade. That doesn't work in Cutter's favor. The fans are, you know, their frustration is at an all-time high.
Understandably so.
And understandably
so. By the way, Greg Joseph is the kicker's name. He kicks for Cleveland.
Nice.
Two kicks he's missed all year. The Bucs, they can't get through a game without missing two kicks. Here's the real across the bear for Cutter. We all know, I said it a while ago, the only reason he got the job was Jameis Winston. Jameis has declined in his play.
See, now that's a strong point from DeKemper, Steve. It is the primary reason that Cutter was hired. It is. Nobody can argue with that. His relationship with Winston, how well the offense played when Winston was a rookie and he was the coordinator. They set a franchise record for yards, and they didn't have O.J. Howard.
No.
And they didn't have DeSean Jackson. And they didn't have Godwin.
They didn't have Vincent Jackson, although end of his career.
So, Steve, on that issue alone, Cutter gets a failing grade because I called Winston a middle-of-the-pack passer. I think that's fair. You might say, well, he's asking for middle-of-the-pack money in 2019. Is he better than Ryan Tannehill? Yeah, he's probably a little better than Ryan Tannehill, Steve. But I'm certainly not. At this point, guys, I think we're all in agreement. The Glazers had every reason to think that at this stage, they're gonna spend $120 million on Jameis Winston and give him the money and be happy to do it because they got themselves a franchise quarterback. They're not there, Steve. They're not at that point, and Cutter has to answer for that to some degree. Of course, Winston's got his own problems.
Well, look, I mean, we won't know until Jameis gets with another coach how good he really is or
Correct.
Could be.
Correct.
He's been in one system for 4 years, and he seems to not have mastered it. You know, and maybe it's the wrong system for him, but he's not great in this system. And like Lee said, he seems to be either neutered, less aggressive, declining, too scared. I don't know what it is. There are still plenty of weapons out there.
I want to address some of the Winston fans out there. I think this is important, Lee. Look, none of the three of us are rooting against Jameis Winston.
No.
We all respect the guy. We like the guy. He has flashes of immense talent. He moves a heck of a lot better than anybody thought he would coming out of Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. But let's not get to the point where any criticism of Jameis Winston is considered out of bounds. I mean, that's crazy. Our point is simple, Lee. The number one overall pick in the draft as a quarterback is supposed to be elite after 4 years. Elite. Is that too much to ask?
I don't even expect him to be elite. I expect just be good. Just be at best or at worst average. Just be at worst average. Matt Stafford, he was a first overall pick. Can't be better than him. Matt Stafford stinks. I'm sorry. Now
he's put up some big numbers.
Yeah, he has. Jameis, and I'm not a win-loss record kind of guy.
He's 21-31.
But this is bad, what I'm about to say. This is not good.
All right.
He hasn't won a road game in over 2 years.
I think that's right.
The last road game he won, I happened to be a witness. It was at San Diego.
That's correct. I think it's 11 in a row. Somebody said 12. I thought it was 11.
That's not good, Ira.
Steve, have you checked on that?
Yeah, there's an understatement.
That's not good,
that's
Ira.
That's not good. No, that's not good.
And, you know, the crazy thing is, and I haven't looked into ways to spin it or whatever, but the crazy thing is, Ira, and it's all, none of us before the season would have ever thought this in 1,000 years. Fitzpatrick has started 7 games. Jameis has started 7 games. And Fitzpatrick is ahead of him in really every statistical category.
Not in record.
But from completion percentage to touchdowns to interceptions, it's Fitzpatrick.
Yards per attempt.
Yards total. Yeah, whatever it is. It's hard to believe.
You know what?
And it's the same offense, same weapons.
There were people that didn't want the Bucs to draft Winston. I mean, obviously. But, I mean, there were some people in our area, in our profession. And they had their minds changed, Jameis' rookie year, his second year. That game at San Diego, Jameis brought them from behind. There isn't anyone that was in attendance that day. And there was a boatload of Bucs fans, by the way. They took over that stadium. That is no joke. I've never seen that before. There's no one in that stadium. Chargers fans, Bucks fans, media, referees, you name it. No one that saw Jameis play that game would ever guess 2 years later anyone would be sitting at a table doing a podcast wondering about his future with the Buccaneers. It's Fair really enough. Startling.
Ira, we're going to have a new coach. You have any thoughts right now on who that might be, who you'd like it to be? Where do you stand with the head coach?
I don't think the Bucs are in terrible shape in terms of the breadth of candidates and the quality of candidates that are going to be available. I think there might be a couple of names that haven't even been bandied about, depending on how the season finishes in the final 2 weeks of the regular season. Look, there's some guys already out there the Mike McCartney, Super Bowl winning coach, out there. Some fans like him, some don't. Harbaugh could be out there. If Baltimore finishes, you know, 8-8, they're out of the playoff picture. Biscotti could make a move with Harbaugh. I'd pick him up in a New York second. I think the Bucs aren't in terrible shape in terms of not having a reach for the next head coach. And I think it's clear at this moment, Lee, that they will have a new head coach in 2019.
Sage, though, how can you say that? Because there are going to be a lot of other teams out there looking for head coaches. Jacksonville seems almost definite. They're talking Arizona is going to be one and done with their head coach. The Jets. Yeah, I mean, we already have the Packers and the Browns. I mean, that's a lot of names out there.
Well, I guess I have a little more faith in ownership that they're willing to spend money, which is a big factor. They'll pay.
Mm-hmm. There's a belief out there with some fans that no one wants to come here because of the Glazers. I don't know about that, and there's a couple reasons why. One, there's no question they'll cut a check. No question they'll cut a check.
Well, usually that's enough. Cut the check.
Usually that's enough, but I've talked to enough people in the front office. I've talked to enough people on the coaching staff. And I'll tell you what one coach told me. I asked him, I said, you know, the Glazers breathe. This is maybe a month ago. Are the Glazers breathing down in the back of your neck? Are you feeling the pressure? And he told me, he goes, they're never around. I said, what do you mean? He goes, they're never around. They show up once in a while, they're never around. They leave us alone. In any line of business, if you have a hands-off supervisor, that's a coveted job. They let you do your job. The Glazers let these guys do their job.
This is not a bad job, Steve, in Tampa. I didn't say it's the best one that's going to be available, but it's not a bad one. It's not a bad one.
Ira, Lee's written about this. This has come up. It's going to be a hot topic. Do you let your new coach, who you put all this faith in, do you let him pick the quarterback? No matter what. Now, understood, other teams are a different boat. You know, you go to San Diego like their new coach did. I forgot his name. Anthony Lynn. Phillip Rivers is the quarterback. That's part of the deal. He's part of the establishment. Whoever goes to Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is the establishment, etc. Is Jameis Winston the establishment here?
All right.
He doesn't have that same cachet.
You asked me, so I'm going to tell you.
So what's the deal?
In my humble opinion, I put that one in quotes over there, Lee. I believe discussions with Cutter's replacement will include a mitigating factor that if that guy says, I'm not a believer in Winston, I'm bringing my own guy in 2019, I don't think that guy's going to get hired.
Wow.
I don't think he's going to get hired.
Did you like how he built the drama there?
He did.
I don't think that guy gets hired. The Glazers are invested in Jameis Winston until they're convinced as an ownership group that he's not the guy, and they're not at that point.
I swear to you, I'm saying this with an objective view. I think that's fair because I'm looking at it from a business standpoint. They have how many millions of dollars invested in this guy? And I'm not counting his salary. I'm counting all the ancillary stuff, the promotions when he first got here, the cost of the investigation, which was a seven-figure bill. They've got a lot invested in Jameis, and it would almost be irresponsible not to see what he can do with a second coach.
They're going to take one more shot with number three.
Well, I'll play the side of the other coach. So you got a coach that you like, and you respect the man, and you want him to be thorough. That's what you want in a head coach. Suppose he comes to you and he says, hey, Glazers, you got to convince me why I should trust this guy. He just settled his second sexual-related suit. I don't even know what kind of man this guy is. He hasn't won a road game in 2 years. You know, assuming they don't win next week in Dallas, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think this guy might be good. I like this guy in the draft. Why should I trust Jameis? Now, you think they immediately cross a guy out who is skeptical?
I think that guy's talking himself out of a job.
Or do you think the Glazers give a sales pitch on Jameis? How does that work?
I think the Glazers feel they know enough football to know what a quarterback looks like, and they think Winston can be salvaged into an elite player.
Well, here's the key. They probably know Jameis a hell of a lot better than any candidate they interview, any candidate that's not coming from within the organization. I don't know who they would hire outside of Monken, but I'm just saying that. So if a coach would come in and say that to Joel or Ed, this guy, I'm not working with him. And they're like, have you ever met him? Do you know him? Why don't you try? It almost
comes across as a coach with a closed mind. And would you want a coach with a closed mind? I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't say that he wouldn't work with the guy. I said if he comes in and says, why should I trust him? What do I know about this guy?
I think even in preliminary conversations with the Glazers, I think it would become apparent to a coaching candidate how they feel about Jameis Winston.
Gotcha.
It would come across.
Well, you know what? If I was a coaching candidate and I'm looking at the options, I would want to try to work with Jameis because you have an idea what you got.
I think that's a good point.
You have an idea what you have. You have an idea. Whereas if you get rid of Jameis, and I wrote this twice Monday on JoeBucksFan.com, you're looking at Joe Flacco or you're looking at Tyler Perry, but no, he doesn't play for Aerosmith, the backup, Bryce Petty. That's what you're looking at.
If he doesn't raise his game under a new regime.
Then he's gone.
I hear you, Sage. Look, one of the most important stats that came out again, it comes out every year, but it was brought out again by ProFootballTalk.com this week when the Bears clinched. That I believe that's 14 out of the last 15 years, a club has gone from worst to first.
That's part of what makes the NFL great.
Exactly. It's also part of what makes Bucks fans insane. And that makes Bucks fans impatient, and you know that makes them hate when people talk about, oh well, you do this, you hire this guy, we won't win for 5 years. You get rid of this guy. No, you got to win. And it's not that hard. Teams do it every year.
That's a great way to look at it, Steve. Now, as I like to do, Lee, I like to put his bits in the crosshairs a little bit. So this podcast isn't going to be any different. Steven, you made the trek in cold and miserable weather up to lovely Baltimore, a city that I've never been to.
Oh, you haven't?
In all my years. Never went to Baltimore. That's right. I haven't been to Bartow either, my friend. but I've been to Micanopy. Now, Stephen, you went to Baltimore. You survived the trip. Lousy weather. Give me a couple of your takeaways, Steve, from the locker room. What was the mood in there? You've been in a lot of losing locker rooms for this franchise. Was this one different in any manner?
It was, Ira. And you know what? Right after we hear from Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, I will tell you about what I found in Baltimore. $20,000 off, 0% APR for 72 months. It is the 2018 model clearance event at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Our great friends at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, they present the Ira Kaufman podcast and all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. We have been out to both dealerships. They are fantastic. Of course, the Ed Morris name means more than 70 years of service and commitment to the community across Florida. At Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, they have the new XT4, the beautiful crossover, is available. 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. And they have a long list of special offers. It's right there on the homepage of the website. You will be impressed. And of course, the signature showroom at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. General manager Brian Danahy has been on our show. He's a great friend of the podcast and Bucks fans everywhere. And the offers are fantastic. Get to EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com. We thank Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa for all of their support. You should support them. And here's Ira. All right, Sage, we are back, and I'm going to tell you all about it. Look, Baltimore, I have to wag a finger at Dan Lucas of Channel 8. I was waiting at the stadium for him to give me a ride back to the hotel. I was going to bum a ride. Not nice weather.
I like it.
I'm going to bum a ride on their, a company taxi for Channel 8.
same hotel as Lucas?
Yeah, or company Uber taking back there. So I'm waiting around in the stadium. No problem. Just, finish my work for the day, chatting to some people.
Was he there with Hanson? Was Hanson there?
He was there with his photojournalist, Hanson. Right. And they get downstairs, get outside, and they're like, let's walk it. I'm like, I got my bag. I just came in from the airport. I got my luggage with me. Not a lot of luggage, but I got my bag. I'm like, all right, I can walk it. It's like 0.9 mile.
Is it raining at this point?
It stopped raining. It's about 39 degrees. Everything's wet. Whatever. Okay.
Channel 8 doesn't want to spring for an Uber? What kind of world are we living in?
No, they wanted to walk. They wanted to walk. So, okay. So we're walking. Hanson says to Dan Lucas, "You know where you're going?" And he's like, yeah, that's, we're going to see it soon. We're going to see it. So we get to Camden Yards, and and Lucas is like, oh, that gate's usually open. You can cut right through. So our mile walk turned into like 1.7 miles.
And you're lugging some luggage over
and
there.
And I got this thing over my arm, and I'm like, all right, you know, now I'm not going to hit the treadmill at the hotel because I've already had my workout in 40-degree weather.
Outstanding.
Thanks to Dan Lucas.
Did they spring for dinner with you? No, absolutely
No, I
not.
Was done by that. I was done by all that. Right. It was late.
I thought you were going to say something about that. There was a Ravens cheerleader around the corner.
No, no cheerleaders.
All right, now for game day. Tell me about the experience.
Look, yeah, Sage, you would have liked it. Good food spread. A great view from there. And I got to say, for you know, the announced attendance was 77,000, which I'm assuming is the stadium capacity, but there were at least 55,000 people
nice.
There in just horrible weather. And if that game, 40 and rainy, was in Tampa, you would have had like 22,000 out there.
Oh,
so,
if that.
See any Buck jerseys, Mr. Risby?
Yeah, so a good amount of Buck jerseys on both flights in and out. And yeah, there were some Buck people there. It's a great place to go to a game because you can fly in and you can take the light rail right to the stadium.
Nice.
And Camden Yards is also right on the light rail, and you can stay in a hotel right there. I mean, if you're a Rays fan or you want to go to a game one day or take in a Ravens game and the Orioles in a weekend in September or something, I highly recommend it.
So it's like Minnesota, or there's a bunch of cities like that. You got light rail to the stadium.
And both stadiums are next to each other, Camden Yards and the other, you know, half.
M&T, yeah.
M&T, and there's a casino, Horseshoe Casino is right there as well. So you got it all in one shot.
Oh, now, well, what Buck jersey? Did you see any Winston or Mike Evans?
I don't know. I didn't see numbers there. It was
and coats on, right?
Now, you were going to give us some insight into the locker room.
Locker room, somber, very somber. I don't know if that was completely maybe because of just it was such a hard physical game and the elements and guys are cold and worn out. But a very somber locker room. Maybe the guys realize that this is the end. JPP hung out for a long time. Gerald McCoy was almost bitter, you know, almost a little grumpy, a little bitter. I didn't write it up yet, Ira, but he was asked by Jenna Lane about the fans and, you know, what do you want to tell them as far as Dirk Cutter and that situation? And he said, I don't care about the fans. And it wasn't the best answer, but he was just trying to say that I'm just doing my thing. And you know,
I don't think Dotson should be ripped for what he said, Lee.
Every man on his own?
Well, every man on his own means, professional pride. Professional pride.
Well,
And you play for your teammate. You know, that's who you play for.
Well, I wrote you're going to see a whole lot of freelancing going on here. You know, guys, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line. Are they going to do what Dirk wants them to do or whomever, and it makes them look bad? You know, they want to put some film out there for their next employer, whether it be with the Bucks or whether that be with another team. I wanted to say this a little earlier. I've only been to Baltimore once, long, long time ago, the same week that I went to Ronnie's house, which now is Trump's pad. I'm sure the city's changed.
He's on a first-name basis with Ronald Reagan now? What's going on?
Anyway, I didn't get to go to the Lincoln bedroom, unfortunately. But anyway, no Nancy Reagan jokes. Light rail from the airport to the stadium. Minnesota's like that. St. Louis used to be like that. There's a lot of cities like that. Ira, you're such a celebrity. I would be shocked that some of our city leaders, our area leaders, are not listening to this podcast. Will you guys catch a freaking clue and get some light rail in this town? Would you please?
Well said, my friend.
Step into the 21st century, for goodness sake.
Well said, my friend. Was Jensen hanging around, Steve? Jensen talking about seeing his old buddies with the Ravens at all?
I talked to him last week about that. No, not that I saw, Ira. The Dotson thing, I talked to Dotson before the other media came over, and that's when he said how disgusted he was that guys seemed to be, at halftime, having a celebratory mindset, and they were losing by 1 point. And Dotson, I really kind of pushed Dotson on this, like saying, is it really what you want to say? Is this really what you mean? He's like, yeah. I said, so it really stuck with you all the way till now that these guys came in and were acting like they won something and they're losing 10-9. He couldn't believe it.
That's immaturity.
He couldn't believe it.
That's been a constant theme of Dotson's for 3 years, that there's, immaturity. Guys thinking that they roll up to Arizona. We got this game won. We just beat the Saints, and they got
Steve,
throttled.
You got to hate to lose in this league. You have to hate to lose. I don't see that from the 2018 Bucks. You guys have been in all these locker rooms. I don't see it necessarily.
A year ago, there was a fracas in the Bucks locker room for that very reason. I don't have to say, man.
I don't know, Ira, but it was kind of somber. JPP, he's funny. He's very much in it for himself. You know, he's very much a selfish player, but he's so selfish and so devoted that he becomes a great team player. I think I've sort of pegged him that way. And you can have guys like that on your team. Like, he just wants
he's
to...
He's going
to
do his thing.
He's going to do his thing, his way, kick ass, and go all out, and that makes him a great team
and
player.
And you want to join me, or you don't want to join
right.
me? Because I'm going to do it.
I asked him about the Pro Bowl, and the votes, by the time the podcast pops, we'll know who the Pro Bowlers are. He said, I really couldn't care less about the Pro Bowl. I know how good I am, and that's all that matters. And I asked him if he would go. You know, because a lot of guys skip the Pro Bowl. He's like, I don't know. Maybe not. He has a totally different mindset. It's all about him being satisfied with himself. And Gerald McCoy, I don't think he's going to make it this year, Ira.
What do you think up close and personal? Lamar Jackson. Steve, what are some of your takeaways from Lamar Jackson? Is his style of play sustainable? Is he a short-term option? And how impressive was he?
What do you think, Harry? You're the sage. Who cares what I think? What do you think?
I think Baltimore will have a new quarterback within a year or two. I think they'll have a new guy, and I think Jackson might stick around as a change of pace guy, but I don't think he's going to be the Ravens quarterback by 2020.
He'll get beat up, you think?
I think he'll get beat up. Although he was very careful against the Bucks, he didn't take a lot of shots.
Well, Cutter had mentioned before that
I don't like the way he throws the ball. By the way, I don't think it's a good motion. He seems to be flat-footed a lot, Steve, and using his arm a lot. I don't think that's going to work.
What I'm going to say is harsh, but what the hell? He's a glorified wishbone quarterback. Cutter said he didn't scramble. Those are all designed plays. Well, that's what a wishbone quarterback does. You know, the Bucks obviously the offense got shut down in the second half. Who knows why, but. Your naked eye. Was there loafing involved? Guys packing it in? Guys didn't care? What was your perspective?
On the offense?
Yeah.
Look, there's no rhythm to the offense anymore. There's no confidence coming from the quarterback. And Chris Godwin, for two games now, he's looked like a deer in the headlights. I think that's an important topic. He went from, hey, we have a number one receiver. We have three number ones to...
That's one of the reasons you can let DeSean Jackson go next year.
To now he's stepping in as a number two. To now he's just been bad for 2 weeks in a row.
I think it's his conditioning.
It may be.
I don't know.
Hasn't Cutter talked about Godwin hitting the wall before?
Yeah.
His stamina?
Yeah, and part of that, I got out of it, is that he was using a mixture of allergy drugs. Because he evidently, and I know those having allergies myself, but they're not severe. Apparently he's got severe allergies. Different parts of the country, you're allergic to different things. You're exposed to different things. And I guess he was exposed to things in Florida he had never been exposed to in his life, and it was messing with his allergies. And he was, for like a month or two, his rookie year, was playing with a cocktail of drugs to try to get the right mix that he would not be, if anybody takes, you know, like sinus medication, at times you'll get drowsy. He was trying to find the right cocktail, the right mix of antihistamines that he could play at an elite level and still not, you know.
Only DeKemper can get the word cocktail into our podcast.
Well, I will say this, speaking of cocktails, Adam Humphrey's family has to, and this may sound harsh, but again, what the hell. Adam Humphrey's family has to be raising their glass and toasts every time Chris Godwin drops a pass because his price goes up. There, I'm not saying Adam Humphries is the best receiver on the team. You can make a hell of an argument. He's the most consistent receiver on the team. And if Godwin, you know, ends the season like he's ending, you can't have any confidence that he's going to be your number one receiver like Cutter talks him as for 2019. DeSean Jackson, we all believe he's gone. And so they got to keep Humphries.
Looking at the overall picture, Steve, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, but I'll say it. I think it'd be very naive to think that at this point, and maybe it's been going on for weeks, if not a month, the Glazers are knee-deep in a regime change, at least at the head coaching level. They're not going to wait till the December 30th finale against the Falcons to decide Cutter's fate. I mean, let's be realistic, guys. They've done it before where they've started a coaching search once they've kind of made it a decision on a guy. A path that they want to take. They've made some inroads. You might say, well, that's not fair. That the guy still got the job. Well, this is the way business is run in professional sports, high-stakes sports. There's a lot of money at stake over here. And I don't think either of you guys would be surprised to know that the Glazers have been talking to people for weeks, if not months.
Well, I had heard when they were looking to hire Lovie Smith, they started talking to Lovie in October. And, of course, he was announced as the coach in January.
That was the year that they started 0-8 under Shiano. Well, this team wasn't 0-8, but they were 3-7, Lee. They were 3-7. And after that 2-0 start, if you're 3-7 as an owner, you're absolutely disgusted. You're appalled.
Well, you know what? I thought the beginning of the end for Cutter was when he benched Jameis. Now, we spoke earlier in this very podcast, Cutter got the job because of Jameis. And when Cutter benched Jameis...
Are you talking about the Bengal game in particular or the
aftermath? Oh, afterwards. Yeah, aftermath. Yeah, okay. You know, I don't blame him for pulling. You know, Jameis had a horrible game against Cincinnati. Of course, pull him. I don't have any issue with that. But when you bench the number one quarterback, the guy who you were hired to coach up, and it looked like you were getting a job done with him previously, when you did that, that to me was just a white flag. Like, I can't work with him. And I think that was the beginning of the end. The only thing that was going to save him after that was Fitz magic, and it turned into Fitz tragic.
Steve, you know my main point when I keep carping on how Winston should have started at the Meadowlands. A very simple reason. Fitzpatrick wasn't getting the job done. He wasn't Fitz magic at that point. No. He had lost, I believe, 5 straight starts, Steve, at that point. Not 5 games in a row, but his last 5 starts he had lost. At that point, after that 2-0 start.
Pittsburgh, so Chicago.
He was 2-5. If your backup's not playing well, and you got a guy who was the number one pick in the draft, and the owners haven't completely turned on him, how can you not go back to Winston? I still don't figure that one out.
He was 2-4. The 5th loss came in New York.
Okay, that's right. That's
and,
right.
And, you know, it's a crazy thing, Ira. But, look, going back to Baltimore, a couple of things in that game. First, I guess just visually, Lamar Jackson looked so much faster than everybody else
on a wet field in the same
conditions. You know, it's just like when you go to a high school game and there's one kid who looks like 6 times better than everybody else and can't catch him. It was kind of like that. But in that game, we saw the Bucs running game get going.
Yes, it did.
And then disappeared. One thing I got, a vibe in the locker room I got listening to a couple of the guys, is that there was some disappointment that Cutter, Monken did not stick with the run game more.
I think their answer would be the Bucs didn't get enough snaps. Lee, they didn't get enough overall snaps, Steve.
Well, we know that. We
first
saw
half
that.
They had plenty of snaps.
But, you know, it was a tight game, and maybe they didn't have the snaps.
I don't
know.
The O-line played well on Sunday. I thought the protection was good.
Okay.
Did you notice Terrell Suggs? I mean, all day
long. No, I thought they played pretty well. The only sack Jameis took was on the first series. After that, no sacks. And that's a hell of a defense. They were blitzing, doing all the stuff that they do.
They killed Mahomes the previous week.
Yeah.
Killed him.
They played better. I don't know. But what I will say about the offensive line, Cutter all but named names. The infamous 4th down run on 4th-and-1 where Barbara got blasted 2 yards by the line.
Third and one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
was it 3rd-and-1? I was thought it was 4th.
Yeah, that was 3rd-and-1.
That's right. 4th-and-1. 4th-and-1, that was a pass.
Yeah.
That's right. And Cutter was really upset about that. He said there were 2 mental errors.
I thought, looking at the replay on the 3rd-and-1, I thought Jensen missed his block. I thought Jensen screwed up.
It's hard to tell. The guy split directly through Jensen and Benenock, like even split right through him. And that was that.
And then Cutter said 2 guys had mental mistakes on that play.
Yeah.
So it's probably, as John Gilmore said in the post-game radio show, I don't know if it was, he wouldn't say Benenock's name. I don't know for sure if that was him, but if I had to put money on it, you know where money's going.
So Ira, you know, Justin, the commish, Pawlowski, he's got Bucs Uncensored, the podcast, all part of the Joe Bucs fan family, and he's been railing on the offensive line, saying that that's really the biggest, lights have screwed the whole thing up. Ultimately, that the guys aren't as good as advertised, and the O-line is just not...
Well, that's a fair point.
Not very good, and the whole right side of the line needs to be replaced at this point, because he thinks Dotson's too old.
It sounds like it sounds like the commission is saying it's a question of talent as much as coaching.
Well, here's the thing.
And by the way, you got a 3rd-round pick who can't play ahead of Caleb Benenock. That's
well,
the problem.
What I'm getting at is Justin, I think, is on to something. The Bucs bring in players, offensive line, wide receiver, you name it. They don't live up to the building. They slide in there. And I don't know why that is. You could point to coaching. I mean, Jensen, you know, highest paid center. Has he really looked like anything close to a Pro Bowler? He's okay.
However, Lee.
Donovan Smith improved?
I can read his bits of mind. Before you go totally hog wild on the coaching aspect and the development, Steve, to be fair, the Anthony Collinses of the world, the Swaggy Bakers of the world, they're out of football. Steve, nobody wants them. So the personnel department is not getting off scot-free on some of these characters. For the most part, when guys leave the Bucks, now there's exceptions with Bradley McDougal, you know, going out and making a name for himself. Your boy Swayze, don't tell me he's still... Sweezy, he's still playing well. I can point to a lot of guys that have been picked up from the by the Bucks
on defense, yeah.
And they don't go anywhere when the Bucks let them go.
Wrote a story about a week ago. All the players that Lovey Hinn wasn't no part of, they're all starting in the NFL on defenses. And that's a domino effect. But, I mean, look at all these players the Bucks bring in, and they play down. They don't play even. They don't play up. They play down. JPP is an exception, clearly. Whether it be Jensen.
Would you argue DeSean Jackson?
Oh, yeah, I was just the syllables are starting to roll off my lips. My DeSean Jackson won. Ryan Jensen. I mean, you can go on and on. Guys that they brought in, and they've. Has Donovan Smith improved? No, he has not. Allie Marpet, okay. I mean, he's not a Pro Bowler. I don't know, man. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's personnel. Maybe a little of both. I don't know. Jameis certainly hasn't.
I think there's going to be a new group next year that's going to get a different their own chant. Lee, I'm going to end my portion of this podcast because we're hurtling towards a conclusion. And Lee, I'm going to throw this out at you, and I don't think you're going to like your answer.
Uh-oh.
Your own answer.
Oh.
Who's got a better chance as we sit here entering the 2019 season of ending their playoff drought, the Bucks or the Browns?
Oh, the Browns. It's not even, that's a no-brainer, man.
Doesn't that hurt to say that to Kemper?
It's sad. It's very sad. And it shows how far this franchise is falling. It's very sad.
I don't know. I mean, the Browns don't even have a head coach yet. Would you entertain Greg Williams if he has a strong finish, but they say, look, we're not going to hire him as the head coach?
No.
No?
No, move on.
Sage is moving on.
Move on. And so are we in this podcast.
One guy name I want to throw at you early, Ira. Mike Munchak. I think he's an interesting candidate for head coach.
Hasn't he had his shot?
He had 3 years with Tennessee, but this is why this will relate to Bucks fans a little bit. His first year, his quarterback was ancient Matt Hasselbeck. They went 9-7.
That's pretty good.
Hasselbeck was gone after that. And he got hurt the next year, and you know who his quarterback was? Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you got to feel sorry for the guy. And then they stuck him with Jake Locker, I believe, in Tennessee, which, you know, and then he was out three years.
He's right.
But he commands a lot of respect. He's a Hall of Famer.
What was his record the last 2 years?
I believe he was 9-7, 7-9, and 6-10, and with no quarterback.
So he was trending down.
He was trending down, but here's what I'm sort of on the same bandwagon. I never thought of Mike Munchak until Steve brought it up. Let's put it this way: the Bucks hire Mike Munchak, they will have a running game.
They'll have
They will have a kick-ass offensive line. Everywhere he's been, their offensive line damn good. Look what he's doing with the Steelers.
I mean, we all know there's more to a head coach than one position or this or that, but I think he's an interesting candidate. Who commands a lot of respect. All his players seem to really
like
him. What
was his
last
year as a head coach?
I think he was 11, 12, and 13. And now he's the Steelers' O-line coach. And the Steelers' O-line is considered the best in football. And, you know, again, we're not hiring position coaches, but
they're badass. That's a badass offensive line.
Yeah, basically Mike Munchak sort of reminds me just his demeanor, his respect he commands, sort of like a Ron Rivera. You know, been there, done that.
By the way, Rivera's another name that can pop open.
And I'd hire him in a blink of an eye, too.
Yeah, I'd hire him in a minute, too. And, Sage, final thoughts. Send the fans out with some of your profound wisdom.
Well.
Come on, profound, baby.
You're going to have a new coach next fall. And that,
January.
That in and of itself. Yes, that's right, by January. Early January, because I don't think Glazer's not going to sit on this. And that in and of itself is like. It's like finding a bicycle under the Christmas tree, gentlemen. Lee, anything you want to top that with?
Well, yeah, but she won't be under my Christmas
keep
tree.
Keep it clean, baby.
Yeah.
This ain't the commission's podcast. Get out of here, Stevie.